So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Revolve.
There's nothing more that I want right now in my life than to be the five-time WWE champion. But you see, that's never going to happen as long as Vince is around.
The Undertaker is going to grab that biker chain. He got it. The title hangs in the balance. Wait a minute. It's Mr. McMahon. The hell is Mr. McMahon? Where the hell did he come from? If Lesnar the champion has a chain, Lesnar retains the title.
The words came out of Vince's mouth.
Because as long as I'm breathing in and breathing out, you'll never be the WWE champion. Never.
Well, I guess it's time that he stops breathing in and out.
Never.
The day of reckoning is coming in Survivor Series.
Father, watch in heaven.
I only ask for your understanding and forgiveness for what I'm about to do.
Hallowed be thy name.
I've been chosen.
Thy kingdom come.
To slaughter the infidel.
Thy will be done.
To bury the Undertaker alive.
It is in heaven.
On Survivor Series night, I will have worked for this company for 13 years. And in those 13 years, Vince McMahon has screwed with me professionally and personally.
I must follow the light.
There comes a time where you have to be held accountable for your actions. Even if your name is Vince McMahon.
Amen. Even though it's gonna crumble down, I'll keep building till you come around. Even though it's gonna fall apart, break my heart, I'll keep building till I'm done.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you. And Wei, you sound remarkably clear over the phone here for someone who's in Montreal.
Yeah, well, the internet connection is astounding these days.
We built an ISDN line just for you.
Yeah, well,
to your car.
Not only that, you built this wonderful video camera. This 3D video camera.
This is way better than Skype.
It's almost like I can see you're sitting right next to me. I even smell it. I even smell that coffee.
It's just a hologram, Wei, with some added elements.
This is amazing. Some light.
How's Montreal going? You got there on Tuesday, and you are there till Saturday. How has the trip gone so far?
Yeah, I'm in Montreal right now to cover a number of events. Mainly, I'm here to follow our colleague Robin Black and his comeback fight. So, those of you who are aware of Robin Black. He used to be a former rock star. Now he, over the past, I don't know, I'd say 7 years or so, he's been very much involved in the MMA community. First, fighting himself, and then becoming a color commentator and analyst for our channel, the Fight Network, as well as the Score. And so this is his big comeback fight after, I think, like a two-year retirement?
Yeah, about 2 years, I think. Maybe a year and a half.
Robin's like, you know, what is he, like 40?
43?
43 right now? And he looks in amazing shape.
Like, I think anyone who has met Robin would be stunned the first time you find out how old he is. Yeah. I certainly was when I first found out how old he was, because he looks nothing
and
what
like,
you would think.
And I don't know if you've ever seen him train, John, but like he's right up there with like these 20-something-year-olds.
It's
quite
incredible.
It's quite inspiring, actually, to see him work as hard as he has.
So that's coming up Friday in Montreal, Quebec, and it's going to feature a lot of the fighters from the TriStar Gym. Eamon Zahabi is making his pro debut, who is Firas Zahabi's younger brother, and Firas Zahabi, of course, the head coach for George St. Pierre and a number of the fighters at TriStar. So if you want to eventually see this fight, it's going to be airing on Fight Network at a date and time to be determined, so we will keep you updated on this show as well when that is finally going to air.
And I'll keep you updated too on this.
Are Ramdeen and Robin going to call Robin's fight? Are they going to voice it?
I don't know. That's a very good question, because they're broadcasting it back down there. I don't know who's doing the commentary for it, though, but Yeah, I don't know. Ramdean's going to be cornering Robin.
Yes, John Ramdean, our own Rammer. Yeah. He's going to be cornering Robin. I wish so much I could go to this, but I'm going to be in New York City this weekend.
Doing what?
Vacation.
Oh.
Vacation. I'm not fighting. I can't fight in New York.
No, I thought you were following something. It's rare that you do something that's not work-related.
Well, it's December now, almost December, and I looked at my vacation, and I've not used one day of vacation this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not one. So I'm using up 2 days here, and then I'm going to use a bunch at the end of the year so that I don't lose any of my vacation.
Are you doing anything fight combat sport related?
Nothing. I am turning my side of my brain off for 4 days. I'm doing nothing. Braden is taking care of the law, as are you, I hope. Can you upload it to iTunes on Sunday?
Yeah, I sure can.
Thank you.
Of course. If you happen to run into a poster, let's say of a John Cena poster, will you turn away?
I'm going to be like, oh, this wrestling crap. I'm going to be an asshole for 4 days in terms of the kind of fans we hate. I'm just going to be oblivious.
Yeah.
To fighting.
That fake stuff?
That fake stuff. I actually had a big discussion with my dad on the weekend. I went to have dinner with my mom was like, I'm cooking a turkey tonight. Do you want to come over for dinner? I was like, why are we having a turkey? She's like, celebrating like American Thanksgiving. Very
sure.
Strange. We live in Canada. Thanksgiving was like 5 weeks ago.
You never needed.
No, I wasn't complaining. I love turkey. It's really good. So I went over, and my dad was asking me about our trip to Montreal that we recently did, and he brought a bunch of my dad is an accountant, and he brought a bunch of the people in his office to his desk.
I thought your dad was a lawyer.
No, he's an accountant.
And your mom is a physician.
Oh, terrible. Even I almost didn't get that.
Some people will get that.
Some, very, very few. Loretta Hunt
Danny
will get
Powers
that.
Will get that.
Yes. So anyway, my dad showed a bunch of my interviews to these people at work. He's like, that's my son here interviewing John McDessie.
Yeah.
So my dad was asking me, he's like, this UFC stuff you talk about, is it real? And there's a part of me that wants to just completely let him just imagine that it is.
As we've done in the past with some of our friends.
Rob Scott, yeah. Absolutely. We kept him for about 2 hours.
I think to this day he still doesn't know.
I think he questions it. I think he couldn't really detect us when we finally let him in on the secret of UFC.
We like to tell him that WWE is the real one.
Yes.
UFC, that's all scripted.
So anyway, my dad was, he was not convinced the stuff was on the level. And I was like, Dad, it is. It really is. And then we got into this big discussion about if it's safer than boxing. And I said, it is much safer than
boxing.
That's
pretty deep. It's a pretty conversation to have.
Yeah. So my dad is slowly, I think, becoming accepting of mixed martial arts.
Is he a boxing fan?
Not particularly. He'll watch it when it's on TV, but I wouldn't classify him as a fan.
But he recognizes that boxing is regarded as a, accepted safe,
yes, very much
safe
so.
Sport.
Because you have to, these people of my dad's age, they were all brought up on boxing being, this is how this is what fighting is, mm-hmm. is boxing. And it's kind of ingrained in you that is a sport. And that is, and it's, I don't know. People look at just the outside. It's two guys standing and it's gloves and that's considered safer than a cage. The cage is such a big deal for real. That's what my dad thinks. It's
the perception.
Exactly.
But I think a strong argument can be made that boxing is more dangerous than MMA.
Oh, I think
because
boxing,
of the stand-ups.
You're hitting a guy predominantly in the head. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have way fewer targets to hit somebody, and the majority of the blows are going to your head.
Not only that, a guy gets concussed. He has 10 seconds
back
to stand
in there.
Up and to get concussed again. So, yeah, well.
A bigger discussion.
Yeah, not for this podcast. I think everybody's already turned us off. Not one wrestling mention at all.
Well, one thing that is not safe is stretching.
Yes.
As you found out, Wei.
As I found out, because over the weekend, in addition to to you having turkey, I don't know what I'm trying to do here. But I was out with my dad for we were just walking around Staples, Business Depot, formerly. And
father-son time.
Yes, and my dad had to use a bathroom, and my dad was in the bathroom at the Business Depot, and I was just walking around looking. And when you're like, you've been sitting for a long time, we had just had lunch, I'm just walking around looking at all these things, and I'm like, my back's kind of sore, I'm just, and I decided to just kind of stretch my neck pulling it in all types of different places. I don't really know how to properly stretch my neck. Maybe that's the problem.
If I stand for a long period of time, my back... Actually, prior to jiu-jitsu, my back would just kill me when I was standing for any long period of time. Mm-hmm. Jiu-jitsu has actually eliminated whatever back pain I used to have.
Yeah, I imagine any type of, physical exercise.
I'm going to go this week, by the way. I'm going tonight.
Good. It's been a while.
No, actually, I went last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it's Wednesday now. I forgot.
Well, I'm not going to be there, so it'll be you.
Oh, you won't be there. Well, I'm still going to go.
It'll be you and Jay.
I can always see your displeasure when I let you know that I can't go tonight. You're like, okay.
It's not really a displeasure. It's just like...
Because I was the one that wanted to do this and was saying, I just need somebody to go with. And Wei, you have more than risen to the challenge. You have been the one keeping me and Jay in order. You are the consistent.
I've been really enjoying it. And a quick shout out to Open Mat MMA on Young and Walsley here in Toronto.
One of their fighters was at the Score Fighting Series, lost in the opening round, but in the opening fight of the night in a dark fight, but representing Open Mat there.
Yeah, but I've just really been enjoying the hobby and. I wanted to get in shape for a long time. I wanted to do something physical for a long time, but working out is just so boring, counting reps. And it's so, it's such a mental struggle.
I hate it.
And not to say jiu-jitsu isn't, but at least jiu-jitsu, it's more like a game. You have the distraction of technique there. And so the whole time you're just concentrating on getting down these techniques, memorizing these techniques, rather than, counting the number of repetitions that you're doing, trying to lift a weight or something.
When I go to the gym, it is just a constant look at the clock of just, when can I be done this stupid? I'm carrying heavy things. I hate it. Yeah. Whereas jiu-jitsu, I never find that. It's just, this is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I am breaking Jason Agnew's knee during a takedown or something. I heard usually he tossed you tossed him last week, I heard.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well...
the whole gym stopped.
No.
No? No, he exaggerated?
Like I think
he said a hush came
over. We were kind of doing like a hip toss. Like in pro wrestling terms, it would kind of be like a hip toss. And I guess... The instructor had told us, now, take it easy, guys. Let your, the person being tossed roll over gently. Don't really toss them. And I guess I just, I got really into it.
You have deceptive strength.
Well, that's the thing about jiu-jitsu. It's all about leverage.
You have deceptive leverage.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, I do not. I think you do. It's all about technique. It really is. I was scared for a moment, and Jay just landed kind of hard, but he got me a few times too. You're going to get smacked around a little, but you know what? It wakes you up. And, I can't go today, unfortunately, because of this neck thing, but it wasn't from jiu-jitsu. It was just from my stupid stretching. Let's go back to that. I was at Business Depot and just stretching, and then all of a sudden, my neck just starts to really, tighten up to the point where, I'm walking around maybe like an hour later and all of a sudden, like, I can't even turn it to my left.
Ugh.
And so, like, at that point, I'm just like, okay, let's just go home. I spent the day in bed. I woke up today and it's a little better. It's a little smoother, but I still like, you know what? Now that I mentioned it, I'm suddenly kind of cured.
Wow. Look at that.
But I think it's just like, my stiffening of my neck and everything. So be careful with your necks, guys.
I just completely...
Protect your neck.
Protect your neck.
Yeah.
It was a month ago that we never talk about physicality on this show, so this is a chance to...
Yeah, I'm sure it's a real stretch.
Ah.
For a lot of people to imagine us doing anything physical.
Well, I went, we were doing like these takedowns into like side control, and I jammed my knee into the mat, and it was just like this excruciating pain. And then I jammed it again later in the, and this was all my fault. This wasn't anyone I was working with. It was simply I went down at a wrong angle. The next day, I limped to work, and I had never felt so much pain before in my knee. And to this day, right now, this is a month later, if I elevate my knee at an angle, there's something wrong. I know that there, because I do it with the other, there is no problem at all.
Okay. Probably time to see a doctor if it's been a month.
It's not pain, but it's like, that's not how a knee should feel.
I don't think you necessarily have to feel pain to go to justify a doctor's visit.
I hate
I'm going to the doctor for this thing.
Are you?
Yeah.
See, I still have like, my doctor is all the way in North
Carolina. Your mom is a physician. Come on.
My mom is a physician. It's like a far drive. I really need to switch doctors. When it comes to stuff like that, like just finding a new doctor and changing, I'm terrible with that shit. I hate dealing with.
You've lived downtown for how long?
Since 2005.
Yes.
I have not changed doctors in that time.
You haven't had the time to find a doctor in that time.
No.
All right.
Maybe I'll go to a walk-in clinic.
Sure.
Maybe a listener is a doctor.
I'm sure we have.
We've got Laser Quest managers. Yeah. We've got kickboxing instructors.
We've got doctors.
We've got fighters.
Yeah.
We have a fighter on the law board.
That's right. That's right. So. Yeah, so if you're a doctor in the Toronto area...
Or and I could, like, email you my problem about my knee so I don't have to visit you or anything. That would...
No. You want a personal relationship. You want the type of relationship with a listener where, you know, he's comfortable enough to just check your private areas and everything.
Yes.
Are we going to get into this review?
Let's chat about the Survivor Series. 2003. November 16th, 2003. I watched this pay-per-view. This was when I had just started with The Law, probably 2 months prior to this. So we were watching the pay-per-views at this time at a bar called Hoops at Young and College. That's where we watched our pay-per-views. And then we ran to the radio station, which was like... 3 blocks away.
Why did you do that? Why didn't you get to watch them at the station?
I don't recall what the reason was, because at that station, that's when we were at, it was still AM 640.
Because that's not a short walk from Hoops to that station.
No, it was, because this is when it was at Young and Dundas.
It's still not short.
We're talking Young and College, Young and Dundas.
Yeah, to me it's a lot.
Jay would drive us, I think, actually. I think Jay had his car and would drive us. Anyway, I think there was just a problem with the pay-per-view box. Because eventually we started watching all the pay-per-views at that radio station. So I don't know why, but I distinctly recall watching the late 03, watching these in Hoops. And I was never really a fan of watching
Hoops.
Them here at a bar where there was always this guy there who was, it was like watching UFC. He thought this was real.
Yeah.
Which was fun and annoying when it's 3 hours. Mm. So anyway, Dallas, Texas, the site of this Survivor Series, brought to you by Blood.
Oh, yeah.
That was the major sponsor of this pay-per-view, all over this pay-per-view. My God, what a different company this was in 2003.
I think watching a show like this, you can see why they went the route, the PG route, as a reaction to shows like this.
I love the fact that, you know, over the years, like, I don't distinctly follow things like, you know, the Disney Corporation and how they've kind of gone from children's movies to evolving. That brand. Keyword evolving. It's like, I don't know of any company where you could find such distinct... Like, they went 180 here. When you watch this versus, like, a show from today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a drastic difference.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't a huge difference. It's not like this was FMW or the backyard.
There was stuff on this show that I did not recall, and we will get to it at some point, I was stunned. Stunned.
And those of you who happened to listen last week to our review of that backyard wrestling documentary, I think you'll be grateful because there's a lot to compare.
What a great follow-up. This was like professional backyarders here.
Yeah.
For some of the, well, for one person specifically on this show. The opening video was built around asking if you can survive and promising that either Kane or Shane McMahon will not walk away from their ambulance match later tonight. This was gimmicks galore here in late 2003 where, the company was not, they were definitely on a downward in 2003, and they got very gimmick heavy towards this part of 2003, where this was like the third straight month where someone's career was on the line.
Right.
They were very much exhausting stips.
And I think a big part of that was because you had McMahon's wrestling on this show, and when a McMahon wrestles, you got to load it with gimmicks. You're not going to do a straight wrestling match.
Of course not. No. So we had a Buried Alive match, an ambulance match, career match.
The Survivor Series matches.
Yeah. At our, then we got a... they showed just some highlights for the Buried Alive match, and we got the fastest screenshot of Brett getting screwed as they went over Vince having to be accountable for his sins.
Hmm.
Literally one frame of Bret Hart on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, that was enough.
Our announcers tonight, this was when the brand split was in full effect with singular pay-per-views. So this was actually a big deal here. Both rosters put together. We had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler for the Raw crew, and then Michael Cole and Taz at ringside. And John Cena comes out to start the show, still in his rapper gimmick, and had recently turned babyface on SmackDown. Comes out, raps, says the pay-per-view is ass backwards with the main event on first. And says,
and what is that main event, John? Let's mention what the match is.
The main event?
No. This match. The scene is coming out.
This match, we had a traditional Survivor Series match here. Yeah. Team Lesnar against Team Angle.
Team Lesnar, yes.
So, he calls his teammates Afterbirth, and then referred to the ambulance.
Uh huh.
He said ambulance.
Yeah.
Who used that term before? Because we've made that joke before on this.
I think it was made famous in some internet video.
Oh, an ambulance match.
Ambulance. Yeah, but this was before. I don't think Cena was referencing that. Maybe he was. I don't
know. No, I don't think he was. He rhymed stable with one night stand with Sable, and he tells Big Show to blow him, to get on his knees and suck his dick.
And he was over, John Cena.
People like John Cena in this period of time.
You look back, though.
This is one of the notorious gimmicks I find does not hold up when you look back.
The lines are no doubt clever, and the delivery was really good. And he made this work, though. But looking back at it and comparing him to the realistic John Cena of today, I say realistic, in that he's not a guy dressed in, a basketball jersey or wearing a chain and talking in Ebonics, right? But Cena made it work, though.
He did make it work.
He took the PN News gimmick, and he made it cool and edgy.
But unfortunately, Word Life had a shelf life.
Oh.
So we got the team of Kurt Angle, John Cena, Chris Benoit, Bradshaw, and Hardcore Holly taking on Brock Lesnar, The Big Show, A-Train, Matt Morgan, and Nathan Jones.
Yeah, this was Team Lesnar.
This was Team Putski.
Sure.
This was a big team.
Yeah.
Very large team.
What did you think of this gimmick at the time, this Team Lesnar?
Well, Nathan Jones and Matt Morgan were called up specifically for this match. They were called up just like 2 weeks prior to this pay-per-view. And I guess the idea was we're going to put all the monsters together. And a lot of people criticized how quickly... Sorry, Nathan Jones had already been called up. It was Matt Morgan they called up here, because Nathan Jones had been on the roster for a couple of months at this point. But Matt Morgan was called up, and everyone criticized how this guy had the potential to be a big, big star, and they were calling him up way too soon. Hmm. And then this run really went nowhere, and then he would come back later with the stuttering gimmick.
Hmm.
And then eventually evolve into the carbon footprint.
Yeah.
The DNA of TNA.
Mm-hmm.
So the match begins. The big feud that they were brewing here was Lesnar and Hardcore Holly, where Lesnar had broken Hardcore Holly's neck the prior year, and this was Holly's first chance to get at Brock Lesnar in a match since his return.
And what a story they're about to tell.
That would culminate in the most unlikely Royal Rumble WWE title match between Lesnar and Hardcore Holly.
Yeah.
Matt Morgan had the dyed blonde hair. He was actually in a tie-in from the backyard last week. He was discovered on Tough Enough 2 and got injured on the show and then signed him to a developmental deal.
You probably went up there right after the Lizard.
Yeah, he followed the Lizard and said, "Hey, guys, I've got this better idea where I'm going to be a piece of DNA and I'm going to put my DNA into space."
Yeah.
Be awesome. Anyway, they play up Holly waiting for Lesnar, and Holly attacks Lesnar before the match even begins, sends Lesnar into the steps as pyro was filling out throughout the air, and before the bell even rung, Hardcore Holly was disqualified. Is this possible? How can you be disqualified before the match even begins?
It is when you have a lot of guys to get through and only 13 minutes with which to do it.
I guess that is their creative license. So Holly is eliminated right away, leaving the fans, "No! We wanted Lesnar Holly, and you're not giving it to us?"
Yeah.
Oh, the money I will pay to see this in a few months.
With all the emphasis they put on Hardcore Holly leading into this match, I thought he came off looking like a total idiot here. Just getting eliminated without even, you know, 2 seconds into the match.
Bradshaw then eliminated the A Tensai with a clothesline from hell 30 seconds into the match.
Yeah, we're talking like, these are like a series of quick eliminations here. We're talking like 2 moves at the most.
Bradshaw, after his successful pin, was eliminated 19 seconds later via chokeslam by the Big Show. They were just going fast and furious here to get these guys out of here.
Yeah, and you know, you understand why they do it, because of the limited time. But at the same time, if you're just going to get rid of 3 guys off the bat, why not just make it a 4-on-4 match to begin with?
Well, you needed A-Train and you needed Bradshaw in this
match. Oh, yeah, you really did.
This isn't Survivor Series without the A-Train and Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the match continues. Cole brings up the fact that Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, and Hardcore Holly all have something in common. They've all broken their necks. What a great stat.
A lot of guys have that in common.
This was where everyone was breaking their necks in this company, and they were Dr. Lita Youngblood.
Lita making her comeback here.
Yes, that's right. She was making her comeback also from a broken neck.
But she broke her neck filming Dark Angel. Dark Angel, yeah.
Yep. Angle tags in. Hit 3 German suplexes to Morgan. Then Jones hit a big boot to Morgan after Angle ducked, and Angle hit the... Angle slammed to Matt Morgan and pinned him at 9:05. Welcome to the roster.
Yeah, not much for Matt Morgan here. He looked very green, certainly.
Do you know what Kurt Angle did 2 days after this pay-per-view?
What's that?
He had another neck surgery.
Oh.
Because his first one, there were complications after he took a chair shot to the head.
Oh, it's insane. Like, what benefit really was there to sticking around for this length of time versus taking the more invasive neck surgery?
Well, Kurt didn't want to take a year off, and I mean...
Yeah, what did he gain in that year?
Well, he was working all these pay-per-views, probably getting some nice bonuses.
He would have worked that anyway.
Would have got his downside if he... he would have just got his downside if he sat out for a year.
So what? But his career would have been prolonged.
This guy... Believe me, of all the people in wrestling, no one thinks more short-term than Kurt Angle, in my opinion. This is a guy who
YOLO.
Worked WrestleMania with his broken neck and decided to go out there and try to steal the show with a broken neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how he won the gold medal, right?
I will always remember when he was on Off the Record with Michael Landsberg, and Landsberg brought up the fact that, you know, with this style you work, I mean, do you ever think about the idea of being in a wheelchair at 50? Yeah, and I'm fine with that. Okay, then. That's his mindset. Anyway, at least that was his mindset in 2001. Big Show comes in, clotheslines Nathan Jones after Angle ducks, same spot again, and then we got the ankle lock on Nathan Jones, who taps out. What monsters these guys were, Morgan and Jones.
Yeah, they really did nothing notable in this match other than, you know, look big.
Jones had pretty much worn out his welcome here. He was someone Vince was very high on, but by this point, they had realized we can't do much with this guy. And then it was just a few months after this where they went on a tour of Australia. And interestingly enough, that is where Mr. Nathan Jones is from, arrived in Australia and told WWE, I'm not coming back. Got a free flight home.
Wow.
Good for him. His best work.
What is he up to these days?
I don't know. He was in that movie with Brad Pitt in like 2004. Some movie about ancient civilization. I can't remember. One of those BC movies. Fact-checking thread will correct me.
Yeah, the whole world is just screaming at the radios right now.
You idiot!
Is it Troy? One of those
I think it was Troy. Yeah. I think it was Troy.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was Troy.
Then you could start a waiting fact-checking thread if I'm wrong.
No. Everyone loves you. There's actually a poll going on now. Who would you rather be, John or Wei?
Which I'm very creeped out by.
With one person noting, now the choice might be obvious, but just remember, if you pick John, then you get to be best friends with Wei, because you would never pick John. Lesnar hits an F5 to Kurt, pins Kurt at 9:44, and we're down to Lesnar and Big Show against Cena and Benoit. Benoit attacks the left arm of Lesnar, blocks an F5, gets into the crossface, but Lesnar counters, gets the crossface again, Lesnar makes it to the ropes, then Benoit gets it a third time and taps out Lesnar at 11:54. I know Chris Benoit is always a touchy subject, but we are viewing this in terms of This show,
yep.
He was fantastic in this match.
No, he
was so good.
Him and Angle. That hot tag from Angle right before he got eliminated, everything.
And
that.
This is when Kurt was really hurt.
Yeah.
So that kind of explains why he was not more of a focus in this match. But there was a period here coming out of this show where they did... they were doing... Lesnar was just, I think, at his working peak during mm-hmm. this late fall of 2003
sure.
where he was working with Benoit on TV. He did a match with Ray on TV. Just phenomenal matches.
And really, like, yeah, it's a testament to Brock Lesnar and his ability, but it's also a testament to that roster of SmackDown at this time. I mean, look at everybody he was working with here. This is, like,
yeah.
the top talent of the past 20 years, right, on this brand.
And they hit John Cena really well here with Benoit.
Yep.
I mean, Cena was just kind of, he was tagged in after the elimination to Lesnar. The crowd was chanting, "You tapped out." And Cena comes in. There's a shoulder block off the top rope to Big Show, and then with the referee's back turned, Cena hits Big Show in the face with his chain, and then picks up Big Show for the FU, and pins him 13 minutes and 18 seconds.
This is the first instance that Cena FU'd the Big Show, or attitude-adjustmented the Big Show.
Attitude-adjustmented the Big Show.
Yeah.
And then we do it again at WrestleMania the following
right.
year.
And, you know, to this day, it's a very impressive visual just to see somebody carry the Big Show over the top of their head. And, this was a... I thought Cena... Sorry, did you go to the finish already?
No, that was the finish.
Okay.
8 eliminations in 13 minutes.
I thought they did a wonderful job here highlighting Cena, highlighting Benoit by giving him a tap-out over Lesnar. Of course, Benoit would, in a few months go on to win the title, and Cena would go on to, you know, greater things as well. So an excellent match. The SmackDown roster from this era was just very strong in the ring.
And Benoit offers his hand, and him and Cena bump fists to end the match. He got Cena and Benoit a moment of...
Fist bumping. Interesting.
Yeah. Would have loved to have seen... Maybe Cena and Benoit could have done, like, a rap right. together or something.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have.
Let's move on. Vince McMahon is in the back.
I feel awkward now.
Yeah, I know. Vince McMahon is in the back at his absolute biggest, I think. So let's keep Putski nominees here. That first match, Nathan Jones, to me, was the big standout.
Yeah.
Anyone else in that opening match that really screamed?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, Kurt Angle, compared to now, very big. Even like, you know, Chris Benoit,
yep.
big guys.
Hardcore Holly.
Sure. I don't know how you pick, though. But I'd say Vince McMahon probably outranks.
Vince McMahon, to me, beat out Nathan Jones.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon looked just... maybe it was the tan accentuated it.
Mm-hmm.
He just looked insane here. Like, insane when you compare to 8 years later of what mm-hmm. he looks like, 9 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks in the back into Shane's locker room and says that Shane's match should be a great one tonight, and brings up that they each have singles matches with Kane and The Undertaker, and calls it ironic. But he feels protected tonight by a higher power.
Not ironic at all, by the way.
I guess Vince has forgotten that he was the higher power.
Yes.
Remember that big reveal?
There are many higher powers.
Shane says he only feels sorry for Vince. And that was our moment with Vince and Shane. Vince left, walked into Steve Austin. They laughed, and then Austin just stone-faced him.
Steve Austin, by the way, is the current Raw co-GM, and his...
And Vince was exclusively on SmackDown at this point.
His,
so this was these are one thing I liked about the joint pay-per-views was you got interactions by people that you hadn't seen interact in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Yeah, these are always something to look forward to on the big pay-per-views versus the brand-only ones. And there are always like little nods to what would be coming up next. Like, for instance, Goldberg and Lesnar was later promoted for...
Imagine that. We had WrestleMania teases at the Survivor Series.
Yeah, yeah.
What a concept.
Well, they kind of did that last year with The Rock and...
they hadn't announced Rock and Cena.
Yeah,
so we knew where we were going there. They have some long-term booking now. We know Rock is mm-hmm. going to be at Rumble.
Yeah.
So little things have been teased. Then we go to Lita's comeback against Molly Holly for the women's title, Molly defending the title. We had a sign in the crowd, "Take me to your Lita."
What was that? Oh, I get it.
Oh, wow, that's clever. There was an even better sign later on in the show. So Lita here goes for a head scissors, gets sent to the floor, and then goes back first into the barricade by Molly. Molly works over the neck, including a dragon sleeper, and then a handspring back elbow into the corner. Lita went to the top and hit this awkward cross body. Then Lita powerbombed Molly out of the corner and gets another two count. And then Molly hit a side Russian leg sweep. Sorry, Lita hit that. Then missed a moonsault off the top. And Molly to the top hit her Molly go round, which is
the
basically
least,
a forward somersault.
The least intimidating name for a
Molly
heel,
go round?
A heels finisher ever.
Well, it used to be more scary because her gimmick was she had a big ass,
yes.
As Lawler would point out. Molly then takes the turnbuckle pad off. Lita rolls her up, quick kick out, and then Molly sends her into the exposed turnbuckle and pins her at 6:49. I thought Molly was fine in this match,
yeah.
But Lita really showing the ring rust here. And
I've always felt Lita was kind of sloppy in the ring, you know, all of her moves. And like, she just doesn't really have a wrestler's physique. You know, she seems kind of dainty in
she
there.
She was good for spots. She was really good for coming in, doing the moonsault.
Yep. The Hurricanrana was really good. But obviously, you know, Lita's very over in terms of character, in terms of look, in terms of personality. Molly, on the other hand, not a very convincing heel to me. Like, she just looks like somebody who... She comes out, you know, just like grinning, her teeth gritted, and I just don't buy it. Because she looks like the nicest person in the world. She looks like somebody who never frowns on a day-to-day basis.
Then there's a video for the Kane and Shane McMahon feud. I love this. This was some of the Kane greatness that we love, including Kane's attack on Linda with Linda's stunned look of fear. The greatest facial expression of shock, and done to this overly dramatic music for the entire video package.
You know, this was Old Fortuna by Carl Orff. It's a famous
yes,
classical
it's a
song.
Very famous classical song. I did not know the title of
it. Yeah. There's no, and I don't think Carl Orff, when he composed this, thought that he would...
Thought that this would be done to a man's balls being electrocuted?
No, probably
as he's
not.
Tied to a ring post?
No.
Not done to a Kane being put into a burning dumpster, or Kane put into a limo where Shane put a brick onto the gas and drove it into a tractor trailer?
Probably
this,
not.
I think one month way I want to dedicate... I really wish we did a few of the Raws leading up to this, because this featured some of the best of Kane, or the worst, depending on your sick enjoyment you get out of pro wrestling. But personally, I remember this electrocution of Shane's balls way too clearly.
Feels like this was booked by one of those backyard wrestlers, the brothers.
This is on par with it.
Oh, absolutely.
This is. I was waiting for Linda to be rubbing a black cat, saying, "Beatings have just begun, Kane," and then turn on Shane and be Kane's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Be like right out of Friday the 13th.
That's
Kane would be Jason.
You joke, but like that's happened, has it not?
I think Kane was very much based on the Jason character.
No, but I mean the mother turning. Hasn't Linda turned or something?
She was a heel when she kicked Jim Ross in the balls.
There you go.
Which highlight of my wrestling life was watching the election coverage of 2010. The CNN panel goes to Linda kicking Jim Ross in the balls.
Love it.
On CNN.
I love it.
I love wrestling for moments like that. And that takes us to the ambulance match, Kane and Shane.
Basically, it's a casket match. You just have to
put a guy into a vehicle and close a door, and that signals defeat.
Yeah. And then you gotta watch.
Why haven't we ever got, like, a locker room match where you gotta lock a guy in a locker room?
Sure. Or a closet match.
Yes.
You put the guy in the closet.
That's a lot of missed opportunities.
It'd be like a Billy and Chuck closet match.
It could be a come out of the closet match.
Ah.
Lawler notes that Kane is going to flatline the heartbeat of Shane, which I found a little disconcerting with the current situation. And
what?
Then. Well, with Lawler having a heart attack recently. Here he's talking about a guy's heartbeat flatlining on a pay-per-view. So they give this big dramatic build-up to this match, and Shane walking into this violent match and his career on the line comes out dancing as always. Shane, always ready to dance.
You got
to
be entertaining. You got to be colorful.
I will never be able to watch this man's entrance without Dan Lavransky's voice echoing. The fuck? Dancing like a fucking idiot. It was a big... people just, I think, watched this man dance and could not get into this guy.
I couldn't. I couldn't get into him no matter what he was doing.
I never enjoyed Shane McMahon.
I know there are a lot of people that do, and I totally understand why. We're going to get to that. First, the match.
Kane, do you want to describe the opening spot and the near death we had on pay-per-view?
All right. Well, Shane... cross bodies himself over the top rope onto Kane to start. And then he does these really ugly-looking punches. And let me just get to my point about Shane McMahon, okay? Shane McMahon, I look at him, and all I see is the Lizard. Here's a guy with no wrestling skill, can barely throw a worked punch, but he gets over because he can use any prop he wants. He gets over because he can do any spot he wants. His next spot, within minutes, 2 minutes into the match, goes to the top rope to deliver an elbow drop onto Kane through the announce table. 2 minutes in. No build-up to it whatsoever. Just stay here. Let me jump on you. And
this is the kind of match way that if you were an indie worker and sent in this tape, like the WWE, they would laugh at you for having no psychology. You don't know how to work. You don't know how to tell a story. Yeah. You're completely reliant on gimmicks and high spots.
And that's what I mean. Because Shane McMahon, to me, is a backyard wrestler whose dad just happens to own his own promotion.
That's it. You glossed over Kane nearly getting paralyzed here. During that cross body spot, Kane goes over the top and I guess had his arms out to land on the outside apron and land on his back. His arms missed the apron, so he went straight down to the floor. Mm. So watching this, all you see is Kane completely upside down, vertically go down to the ground, and they replayed this like two or three times. How this man was okay is a modern miracle. That he did not legitimately need an ambulance to leave.
That would have been awkward.
That would have been so weird.
Bring a second ambulance in?
The ambulance match ended with an ambulance, and Kane was ended by Shane McMahon. What a way to go out if that would be the case. But yes, elbow drop to Kane in the first 2 minutes. They then go backstage, where they lost the camera signal twice, to which the Dallas crowd, who had spent however much on tickets, were just ecstatic about the fact that they had to watch their monitor of this match. Shane gets a kendo stick to attack them. Then Shane gets into an SUV, backs it up into Kane, sending him through glass. I can only hope it was gimmicked. Kane comes back with a second ambulance, and the crowd boos once again when they lose the signal. They fight back to the arena by ambulance number one, where Shane swings a door into Kane's face. And then Shane nearly gets put in, but they stop as the door comes to a close. Shane then hits a tornado DDT as he uses the ambulance for leverage.
Which looked awful.
Yeah. Not good. Looking even worse was putting Kane on this gimmick box where Shane jumped off the ambulance. And you just saw, like, this cardboard paper mache deal just crumple. Like, shot horribly for effect.
Yeah, I thought that was fine. This was he jumped off the top of the ambulance onto this cardboard box. Basically, it was a Van Terminator, but via top of ambulance.
Well, Shane gets tossed around, including headfirst into the side of the ambulance. And then Kane delivers a tombstone on the aisle to the words of Jim Ross yelling, "Just like Kane did to Shane's mom." And Shane is put into the ambulance at 13 minutes and 32 seconds. And Shane was driven off of television.
And I absolutely understand why certain people will say Shane McMahon is one of their favorite wrestlers, because he is involved in these very entertaining spot fests that are, how could you not like it? And to his credit, let's say this guy has tremendous balls. He seems very tough to be able to take the amount of punishment that he does. But do I respect him for his talent or skill level? Absolutely not. Let me ask you another question. What if they put this same amount of push, all these gimmicks, designing all these props? What if they gave that to a guy like Rey Mysterio or John Morrison or Dolph Ziggler?
But the key is Rey Mysterio doesn't need this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what if he did have that?
Oh, this is a great crutch for guys. Smoke and mirrors are great. And you just have to question where you use these smoke and mirrors. And to me, honestly, you did not need Vince in one of these matches and Shane. To me, Shane never, to me, meant a measurable difference in business. I mean, he, to me, was just never somebody that I could at least understand why they were using him. Vince, I did completely understand.
I don't know.
It just never did it for me.
I think over the years, Shane has kind of built up a reputation for these very entertaining spot fests. And I think in that sense, he can be a draw. Like, if you know Shane McMahon's on card, you're going to see this company put all their worth, a lot of stock into designing these, you know, stunts for this guy to jump off of. But I didn't personally see the value, because you could have had so much more in return by putting this on an active wrestler versus somebody like Shane McMahon.
Sure. Josh Matthews is with, and Jim Ross was scared at the end that this could be the end of Shane McMahon's career.
And then they showed this ambulance driving all the way out the back, and this ambulance had a terrible time getting out to the back. It was very awkward through the curtains and everything.
So Josh Matthews is with Brock Lesnar and asks him about losing and tapping out. And I thought we'd get a callback, so to speak, from the Lesnar-Josh Matthews interaction this year, where Josh asked him a question, and remember, he just tossed Josh away?
No, I forget.
No, that happened this year.
Oh.
Anyway, he asked him about tapping out. Lesnar says, "I wasn't alone out there. I can beat anyone." And cue Bill Goldberg, who walks in, both men the respective champions on each brand, introduces himself to Brock Lesnar, and that was the beginning of the tease that would culminate in one of the most disappointing WrestleMania matches in history. Yeah. Depending on your perspective, if you were there live, like myself, hell of a match. Shane McMahon also enjoyed that match from the crowd, cheering "You sold out" from the crowd.
Oh, did he?
That was the big story coming out of Mania, that Shane was in the stands chanting "You sold out." Promoter's son. Jonathan Coachman then comes out to this hip-hop beat in a neck brace after taking a 3D on Raw the prior Monday. And he informs everyone, "I'm going to be okay in a couple of days." And then spots Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, in the front row. And he goes to interview Cuban.
This was like a tryout for his ESPN gig.
Yeah, it really was. And he wants to see Austin kick Bischoff's ass and says all referees suck in relation to NBA refs and WWE refs. Bischoff comes out, and Cuban is asked to come into the ring, gets into the ring, and this guy got pretty good reaction.
Mark Cuban?
He was over to this Dallas crowd.
Oh, absolutely. He's a local celebrity.
Bischoff says, "Tonight I rented this building," and he threatens to kick Cuban out. Which, I've never rented a building, but I would assume that would not be how the power structure would work.
Hmm.
If you owned this building, Way, and I rented it from you, I don't think I could kick you out of it.
I don't know. You'd have to ask them. I don't know what the laws are like in Dallas.
So, he threatens to attack Cuban. Cuban shoves him down. Everyone pops for Bischoff taking this bump.
And QJR with the one-liners.
What did he say?
"Where the hell is David Stern? That was an NBA level flagrant foul."
Oh, so clever.
Yeah, I'm sure you wanted to make the highlight reel on ESPN.
Oh, night. Yeah. I don't think this did.
No.
Randy Orton pops up from behind Cuban. Cuban turns around and takes a hell of an RKO here. I mean, Cuban here,
yeah,
better than some workers have taken that RKO.
I thought he was excellent. He just looked like he was having a lot of fun out there.
He's a massive fan. I mean, yeah, he's done angles in OVW before.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, like, he loves wrestling.
Wow, that's
so
awesome.
He probably suggested this.
Yeah. RKO me, yeah.
Yeah, let's build a new star with Randy.
Bury me in the grave.
We go to the back. Evolution, Triple H, Ric Flair, and Batista. We're with a bunch of hookers drinking champagne, and they toast to Triple H winning the title back later tonight. And then Orton walks out walks into the room saying that Triple H will take out Goldberg tonight, and Orton is going to end the career of Steve Austin.
Yep.
That was their battle plan for tonight.
Everybody else is just like, yeah, that's great. We don't care, Andy.
Yeah. We're with hookers right now.
Yeah.
The theme song for this show, Way, was Build a Bridge by Limp Bizkit.
Is that right?
This was their follow-up to Crack Addict from that year's WrestleMania.
Build a Bridge.
Build a Bridge.
I don't know that one.
Nope. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, their careers really fell off even at that point, you know.
They're like
Nookie was their big hit.
Nookie. For wrestling fans, it'll always be My Way,
right.
I think. And that was about it. You were never a Limp Bizkit guy, I assume.
Hey, I actually was.
Really?
We all had our periods where, like,
I was into Limp Bizkit for a little bit.
I really liked, and I still like a lot of Korn. I think they were pretty
with
good.
With a K.
Corn with a K and a backwards R. Remember that?
So badass. Backwards letters.
We're not going to spell the way you tell us to spell, man.
We're not going to write our letters like we were taught. But no, like we've all had our teenage phases, and for a time, yeah.
Called our teenage years. Stuff. Those are our teenage phases.
Absolutely.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
I think I went to like a Canada Day thing with my parents, and the Bare Naked Ladies were playing there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think everybody's expecting something much cooler, but no, it was the Bare Naked Ladies from Scarborough. And then I think I went to see Blur by myself.
Oh,
was,
yeah?
Like, my first concert by myself, yeah.
How's that, going to a concert by yourself?
I've done it many times. You're just going to see a band anyway. It's like going to a... I mean, like, I think a lot of people have, like, get-ups about going to the movies, for instance, by themselves.
But, I've done that.
But you're just there to look at a screen anyway. You're not really talking. Like, I was just there to listen to music.
I saw Minority Report on my own once. I don't remember. It was a long movie.
This is getting kind of sad, this conversation.
Yeah, we do a lot of stuff on our own.
The life of a wrestling fan.
The Bashams come out in their brand new S&M ring gear.
Was this brand new at the time?
I think they were just incorporating this into their gimmick.
Jesus.
The Bashams here, Doug Basham and the Damaja, two of the standouts of the OVW developmental program, called up. These two were feuding intensely at the time and then were brought up as brothers and managed by Shaniqua, who was the winner of Tough Enough 2.
One of the winners.
Stealing, Linda Miles, stealing it from the Lizard. It was her and Jackie Gata winning that season's edition of Tough Enough.
Over Kenny King as well.
Kenny King, she also beat out. That is true. And,
these guys, I remember when they were back in OVW, so many people were saying so many great things. They were kind of like...
Oh, I used to watch OVW TV at this point. It was great. There was one show completely built around these two having a match, and it was just the TV was so good in like 2002 and 3 when I was watching it.
They were two of like Cornette's, you know, star pupils down there, and then they get brought up under this gimmick, and it's just so unfortunate because you can see they are very good workers, but just awful gimmicks. And I don't even remember one promo that they cut.
No, this was like Shaniqua would whip them as they were in the. A dominatrix gimmick, and they would just whip these two around, and they wrestled for some reason. I guess they enjoyed the pain. You would think they'd want to lose.
Yeah,
you would. Why would they fight back? They like pain.
That's a good point. They're sadomasochistic. They would want to be attacked.
So we got the Basham brothers against Los Guerreros for the tag titles. This is where Eddie was in the fall of 2003 after he had really caught fire here in late 2003.
And this, you could argue, was the beginning of his run for the title.
Yep. Eddie very over right at the start of the match. Eddie hit the Three Amigos to Danny as the Guerreros had the advantage. We saw an arm drag into a head scissors on both of them from Eddie. But then Eddie got dropped throat first on the top and clotheslined by Shaniqua on the floor. Eddie came back later with a top rope hurricanrana to Doug after Chavo was being beaten down on. Eddie got sent to the floor. They double-teamed Chavo. And Shaniqua here distracts Jimmy Corderas as Doug and Danny make the twin magic switch. And Chavo then clotheslines Shaniqua. Eddie hits a frog splash to Shaniqua. And then Chavo spanks her. The tables have been turned.
Oh, yes.
They are spanking Shaniqua.
Right.
Anyway, Doug then attacks them. Chavo goes for a tornado DDT, but instead of having an ambulance to use leverage, he kicks over Eddie in the process and ends up getting rolled up by Danny, Chavo does, and Danny pins him 7 minutes 32 seconds, so the Basham brothers keep the tag titles. And Eddie is upset at Chavo afterwards for getting knocked over. They have words in the ring as Chavo explains what had happened and teasing the dissent between the Guerreros.
I didn't think this was a great match at all by Eddie Guerrero's standards. I thought
very quick.
It was very fast-paced, and it felt very rushed. It just felt like they needed to get all their shit in the limited time that they felt like they had. This went about 13 minutes. Or was it less than that?
Seven
minutes. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Very
there you
quick
go.
Match. Jim Ross gives us an update that Shane has been admitted to a hospital and is going for a CAT scan on his brain. There's a video for the next Survivor Series match built around Austin's career being on the line. And this is where Linda made Austin the co-general manager earlier this year. And They made a rule that Austin, as co-general manager, cannot touch anybody unless he was physically provoked. And this went all summer long, with all the heels getting in Austin's face and building up to this match where Austin would have the chance, if his team won, where he could attack people. For whatever reason, he could run roughshod on the heels.
Yeah.
But if he lost, his career would be over. This, to me, not a risk worth taking.
Yeah, and not exactly a great lesson to teach children, too. Like, if you weren't barred from doing it, you'd be allowed to attack anybody walking around that you want.
Yes.
And not suffer any repercussions. Any free living individual has the right to attack somebody else.
A babyface vigilante.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't take away what he loves most.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants
randomly attacking people.
I know, Wei, that you don't own too many wrestling shirts, but had you had the opportunity to buy Shawn Michaels' shirt that read, that had a fish with HBK written in the body of the fish?
No.
Would you have bought this?
Probably not.
This might be one of the worst wrestling t-shirts ever.
Oh, for ironic purposes, I think it's hilarious.
Is this like a born-again reference? He's a fish?
I would think so. Is it in the shape of a Jesus fish?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Did you not catch this?
I didn't.
Let
me look it up right now.
Okay, you be the judge here. So, this was our next Survivor Series elimination match involving the Raw crew. We had Team Austin, not involving Steve Austin wrestling here, with Shawn Michaels, Booker T, the Dudley Boys, and Rob Van Dam taking on Chris Jericho, Christian, Mark Henry, Scott Steiner, and Randy Orton. 5-on-5 once again, and this match way would not be rushed. This was the match that got all of the time, and actually, this entire segment, from the video to the closing post-match, this went almost an hour of pay-per-view time.
Wow, is that right? The match itself was only about half an hour, but yeah, including everything, it probably felt that long.
Crowd was into it right from the start. Mark Henry was wearing the most god-awful white, like, spandex tights.
I feel like he's always had bad looking tights, no matter what.
Red Kool-Aid ones.
Yeah.
The blue. White was a.
I know his physique doesn't really lend itself to much fashion, but it just looks wrong, a lot of his tights.
This was a push number, I don't know how many, for Mark Henry,
yeah,
where they'd get hot on this guy every couple of months, and this was his latest one before he'd go down with an injury. I thought Jericho and Van Dam, whenever they were in, were just really clicking together.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes Van Dam can cause a styles clash, but on this night, I thought Jericho and Van Dam really clicked very well whenever they were in together.
Yeah.
Steiner hit a belly-to-belly off of the turnbuckle to Van Dam, nearly killing the man. Waller made a bunch of prison jokes regarding Booker T, and then hits a spinebuster to Steiner. Everyone then brawled on the floor. Steiner hit a low blow to Booker and then applied the Steiner recliner. And at this point, Stacy Keibler was the babyface manager to the heel Scott Steiner, who had won Keibler's services.
Yeah, and she wanted to leave.
Yeah, but couldn't because of a contract.
Right.
And maybe she had a no-compete where she would, if she was not managing Scott, she couldn't manage anybody.
Okay.
That could have been the problem. Steiner then gets in the face of Keibler and ends up taking a neck breaker from the Dudleys and then the bookend. And Scott Steiner is the first elimination at 7 minutes and 27 seconds. And this marked the one-year point for Scott Steiner in the WWE, who debuted the prior year's Survivor Series in the infamous Give Me the Fucking Mic promo in Madison Square Garden that we reviewed.
And what a spectacular year he had.
Oh, he had the Hunter Classics,
yep,
a future DVD release for sure. And then he fought for Stacy Keibler.
Yeah, against the Test.
And Test. And now they were teaming, Test and Steiner.
Yeah.
Great run.
Mm-hmm.
Henry then hits the World's Strongest Slam to pin Booker T at 7 minutes and 50 seconds. The highlight of this being, as he cheered, there was a sign right above him, above his shoulder, that read, World's Fattest Man, as Henry posed. Henry then misses a splash to Devon in the corner, takes a 3D. Van Dam hits the 5-star frog splash, and all three pile on top of him at 10 minutes and 4 seconds. So Henry's out.
And with a lot of work needed to do it, so they were...
protecting Henry as best they could.
Yeah.
Within reason. Jericho ducked from Van Dam, and then Van Dam with a split-legged moonsault. As I mentioned, I thought they clicked very well. Jericho then shoves Van Dam off the top, but then Orton hits an RKO to Van Dam to pin him at 12:04. Dallas here chanting for tables, and the Dudleys, I just thought they were very over at this point, at least to this crowd.
And I think they were over mainly to me by association with the rest of the people on their team. You had Shawn Michaels here. You had, who are some of the other guys? Van Damme.
Booker. And then, of course,
I mean, like, in Austin, you know, like at the beginning of this match, there are multiple chants for all of the baby faces. First, this crowd was chanting for Austin, then they were chanting for HBK, then RVD, and then tables.
Yep.
Furniture.
And yet, a few months after this, the Dudleys would be released by the WWE. So we're down now to Jericho, Orton, and Christian against Michaels and Bubba Ray. And there was a big pop here when Michaels got in and was working with Chris Jericho, playing off their WrestleMania match from earlier that year. Bubba ends up taking a low blow and an unprettier by Christian. He's eliminated at 16:52, so it's down to a 3-on-1 as Ross is selling the dire numbers game for the Fish. And Michaels gets double-teamed. He's pulled to the floor by Jericho. He's just constantly being outnumbered here and ends up being sent into the post where Sean did some colorway. He did some juice here. And the man, I think he took some advice from Chaos and took some aspirin the night before to thin out the blood.
You think so?
Because he was leaking here.
He was leaking. I'd say Vince was probably leaking a little more.
So, goddamn, I can outdo that.
Yeah.
Michaels gets back into the ring. Christian is mocking him, doing the Michaels pose. And this next elimination was just awesome. Michaels just selling so well here. He's just out from the loss of blood. Christian goes to run at him, and Michaels just perfectly times this super kick and falls down onto his back on top of Christian to pin him. 20 minutes and 29 seconds. I thought this elimination was just so great.
It looked and it sounded great. That smack of that kick.
Just so fluid and just looked great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now down to Jericho and Orton against Michaels. Jericho hits the lion salt, but Michaels gets his knees up. Jericho ducks the super kick. He goes for the walls. Michaels counters with a small package to pin Jericho. And then after the match, Jericho comes in with a chair and just keeps attacking Michaels over and over. And this causes Orton to come in with a top rope cross body. Michaels moves, and Orton takes out the referee as we are down to Michaels and Orton. Michaels struggles to get up. He calls for the super kick, but Bischoff runs in, kicking Shawn Michaels with his kickboxing background. And then Austin attacks Bischoff, stuns Orton to a massive reaction, and then Austin fights Bischoff down the aisle, and then both guys are laid out. Batista runs in, powerbombs Michaels with the referee still out. Orton crawls on top, pins Shawn Michaels at 27-28 as Austin runs down too late. And in the post-match here, Austin is just selling this huge. His career is done. Michaels apologizes to Austin that he lost. And it was just like this stunned silence here for this Dallas crowd as Austin realizes his career is over.
Mm. A very good match.
This was awesome.
Match of the night for me. They were given, you know, nearly half an hour here. And I think it's a match like this that really showcases how good a Survivor Series match can be when you can put a baby face in a, you know, handicapped advantage, disadvantage, like you see Shawn Michaels here perform excellently as the baby face in peril. And another benefit of a match like this is you can keep things at a very quick pace, you know, with frequent tags. Everybody is, you know, full of energy. And I thought this match overall was very good. In particular, Jim Ross with this finish, just excellent. Selling the repercussions of Austin losing and following the pace of the crowd and the energy of the crowd tremendously. So this was the highlight of Jim Ross for me on this show.
Jim Ross was just great here afterwards. I'm not a big fan of Survivor Series matches, but this was just phenomenal. I think if you had to ask me my favorite Survivor Series elimination match, this is probably it.
This was
really, really well done. And the announcers react. Austin comes back out, does a promo here about his career starting in Dallas in 1989. He isn't happy about any of this, but at least it's ending in Dallas, and says that he loves the shit out of these fans. And this was all really great, but I don't know of anyone that actually bought that this was the last of Austin we would see.
Yeah.
And he'd be back in time for the Mania match, where he'd be the ref with Lesnar and Goldberg. So it's not like he took any kind of extended leave, and this just kind of felt like, well, let's... And this, to me, kind of cheapens when you do stuff like this, because you can do really special moments like this, but I got the impression no one really took this seriously.
I think if there was a time for Steve Austin to cut a promo like this, it would have been after that WrestleMania match at WrestleMania 19 when his in-ring career ended. You know, by this point, he was only a GM here. His career was already pretty much over, so I don't think anybody bought it. And Austin himself didn't seem all that emotional about this either. He just doesn't come across like a very sentimental person.
No, but I thought Austin's promo was great. I really enjoyed it. I think also watching this in hindsight, it's like, you know, this guy isn't going away anywhere. And I don't think anyone really would have thought that having watched this live back in 2003. So, as I mentioned, this was close to an hour of pay-per-view time that was dedicated to this match. And finally, Coach comes out singing goodbye, mocking Austin. And then Austin attacks Coachman, as well as the security, tosses them to the floor, stomps on Coach, stuns him, drinks beer, and the closing shot is a zoom in on the two beer cans he leaves in the ring. And as Wei mentioned, Jim Ross really sold this huge. And they go to Taz and Michael Cole, who also discuss Austin. They put him over. And then they segue saying this could also be Vince McMahon's last night. It could be the end of Austin and McMahon in one night. It would not. But nonetheless, that was the story they were trying to tell. And we got the video here for the Buried Alive match with the story that The Undertaker wants to be champion but cannot as long as Vince McMahon is here. He has to murder Vince McMahon in order to be champion. It's life or death here, Wei.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring up the biker chain match from the month prior at No Mercy where Vince helped Brock Lesnar retain his title. And they also had a voiceover of the Our Father prayer. What a video this was.
I don't know this prayer.
Our Father who art in heaven?
I didn't go to Catholic.
You didn't go through the Catholic process. This prayer is ingrained into you.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
A good video.
Very well done video.
Yeah.
Then they play up the fact that 6 dump trucks, over 90 yards of dirt, have been brought in. Don't you think that's a lot of dirt?
Yes.
Well, at what point do you say, 3 dump trucks is enough to kill a man? Which is what they were promoting here. Someone will die.
They're saying that to make this mound, they needed 3 dump trucks worth of dirt, is what they're saying.
And they needed a mound. You can't have a Buried Alive match without a mound of dirt.
Yeah.
All right. Then, one of the best parts of this pay-per-view, Taz's keys to victories.
Exactly what the title says, Taz's keys to victory.
For Taker. Oh, those submissions.
This was listed. These are bullet points. John's not making shit up here.
Oh, those submissions.
Yeah.
The fuck does a submission mean in this kind of match?
Oh, those evil submissions. You missed the evil.
Oh, I'm sorry. They were evil. There are good submissions.
Well, you could submit a guy. You can make him pass out using that, whatever, the dragon sleeper that he had at this time.
I guess.
Taking care of business.
Yep, that is true. That is could be a key to victory. But the keys for Vince were just so much better.
Oh, they're great.
Number one, mental stability. Does Vince have it? Is he out of his mind? Number two, invincible confidence. Vince in capital letters.
Yep.
He is confident. And number three, Wei, avoid the hole.
You don't say.
Avoid the hole.
These are awesome. Just them trying to instill like any type of real-world logic into these ridiculous matches, a Buried Alive match, is quite amusing.
Then Kevin Dunn, in one of his great directorial calls, cut away to a sign of a fan who had written out, "You will be buried alive," B-A-R-I-E-D.
Huh.
Spelling mistakes on signs are one thing. Close-ups of them, quite another. Buried alive match.
Maybe he's making like a pun.
On what? Buried?
No, maybe his friends were watching at a bar. I don't know.
This was a child. This was a teenager.
Oh, really?
Buried alive match. Taker comes out looking extremely tanned and by connection very old. And then Vince comes out with his hands together in prayer and genuflex in the corner. Yeah. So he had God in his corner for this pay-per-view.
That was his whole gimmick leading up to this match, was that he had a higher power behind
him. He had God in his corner, and God maybe was not in his corner, and that would be, this would be long-term booking when Vince would get his revenge on God.
I wonder what Shawn,
pay-per-view.
I wonder what Shawn Michaels thought of this angle.
Yeah, probably not. Probably felt like a fish out of water in this disgusting world of WWE booking. Vince McMahon, Undertaker, buried alive match. You want to describe the first 30 seconds here, where we were taken from Dallas, Texas to Niagara Falls, courtesy of Vince's forehead?
Well, they stare down at each other in the ring. Undertaker delivers a punch, and Vince McMahon goes down, starts to bleed, starts to blade himself off of that one punch, dripping a ton of blood. This is like, he was like a paint bucket here.
This put Shawn Michaels to shame.
Yeah.
This was, I recall this so vividly, this blade job of just pouring. This blood was just like a jug of water had reached its limit, and you were putting like a cap on top of it, and it's just overflowing from the jug.
That's a beautiful description.
That is what was happening, but it was blood from a man's forehead.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fight to the floor, where Taker is just continually attacking him and yells, "This is for my wife," as Michael Cole explains,
"Mr. McMahon threatened to have the Undertaker's wife raped, threatened to have terrorists blow up his home, threatened to have the Undertaker's children kidnapped. This is what this is about."
This was a storyline, and I do not recall any of this.
No, that was a line in a promo that he cut on a SmackDown, where he just the line was like, "I'm gonna something about gang raping his wife."
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, well, that was heat at this time.
Yeah, that's how they
non-PG. Come on,
get the female vote for Linda.
There you go.
Unbelievable. I don't recall this at all. And I had to rewind this like three times to make sure I heard it right.
I
Michael Cole. And I'm going to get a terrorist to blow up your house. Taker chokes him with a cable on the floor, then smashes him in the head with a monitor. Taker goes to the gravesite to grab a shovel, brings it back to the ring, winds up, and like cracks the skull of Vince McMahon with this shovel.
Steel shovel, as they
this
tell us.
This was just painful to watch.
Well, it was
cracked his skull.
It was most likely aluminum and not steel.
Oh, okay. Aluminum, very safe.
Oh, fine. Oh, come on.
This was just the thud this made was just unbelievable. He then smashes Vince's ankle with the steps, carries him to the gravesite, where Vince tosses dirt into the eyes of Taker. Now, mind you, Vince has this very visible open wound, and now he is brawling around in dirt.
Yeah, come on.
This was gross. Taker sells his eyes being blinded here, then takes a shovel to the chest and falls into the grave, but he gets up, pulls Vince into the grave. Taker then goes over to a handy dump truck that is just sitting there.
No, it's a front-end loader.
They call it a payloader.
A payloader.
I've never heard of that in my life, a payloader.
I don't work construction.
Maybe someone out there does. But you know what happens with payloaders, Way? There is sometimes pyro attached to these payloaders, and this truck exploded in the Undertaker's face. And who is in the payloader? It was Kane! As the Undertaker is dead, Kane comes out.
From Raw.
From Raw.
Yeah.
Who is immune to explosives, tosses Kane into the gravesite. Vince gets out, and then Kane steals the Undertaker's MMA glove.
Ooh.
Maybe he was thinking that had MMA been popular, Kane would have gone into MMA at the time. That would have been the question of the night.
Hmm.
Was Kane jumping ship to the UFC with this glove?
Pyro allowed in the UFC?
It could have been if Kane had gone there. Anyway, Kane climbs back into the payloader, and Vince signals. Who was in the payloader? Was it Vince?
It was Vince. Oh, Vince climbed in, although I don't know if it was
Vince. I don't think
Vince
it was actually Vince.
Operating this heavy machinery.
Not. So the Undertaker's in the gravesite. They dump thousands of pounds of dirt onto the Undertaker.
And this was a very impressive-looking shot. You had Kane standing on top of this man doing the Undertaker fist-up pose, holding that glove, I suppose, and just a waterfall, another waterfall of dirt falling down right behind him. It looked quite impressive.
And Cole knows, so Kane helps Vince get the win here at 12 minutes.
This was supposed to be shocking because, of course, Vince was only on SmackDown at this time, and this was a Kane who was fighting his own son on this show, destroyed his own son on this show, helping Vince McMahon.
Yes. Well, his own brother, not his son.
No. Kane was...
Oh, you're right. You're
Shane.
Right. Destroying Vince's son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shocking that those two are working together. Number two most shocking, a man is dead, Way.
Yeah. Well,
this guy is dead.
He's buried under...
No one mentioned this fact. Michael Cole lamented that The Undertaker's 13-year career has been buried and points out the blood of Vince is on our desk here.
He's actually already dead. He's a dead man.
I guess so. So has nothing happened here? Can the dead man not die?
Well, he did die, but he was resurrected in WrestleMania.
This was the death of the biker taker.
Yeah. That's right.
The gimmick was gone after this.
But I wonder how they gimmicked the breathing under all that dirt.
Well, there's like usually at the bottom you'd had an area where you just went under the backstage.
Oh, is that what they had?
Yeah.
It was just the mound of dirt though, right there, in the center of the arena.
Yeah, I think it just went to the stage underneath, and that's where Undertaker. Or maybe he just took it all hard, like old school.
You just held his breath,
like Goldberg wanting the glass not to be gimmicked. Taker wanted the real dirt. Bury me legit, like they would have done in Three Stages of Hell, Part 2.
Exactly.
Legit buried alive match. This was something else. A horrible match by technical standards. This was just a. You watch this, and it's hard to kind of sell people on pro wrestling.
Wait, but you watch this, you're watching a Vince McMahon match. You're not expecting a technical marvel here, and I was quite entertained by this. They took what Vince McMahon could do convincingly,
bleed,
and that was bleed. And they made that was the only thing he did in this entire match. And they just had Taker basically beat up a wet bag of red liquid, and that was it.
And this was our second WrestleMania tease. This would be the build to Undertaker's return at WrestleMania and the old gimmick to take on Kane for revenge.
That's right. I thought this was entertaining.
Jim Ross has to come back from this and just simply says, "How perverse." Lawler says, "I have never seen anything like that, but we've got another match to get to. We got to move on as this man has died." And Jim Ross says, "Well, this match will be awesome." It would not be awesome. We got a video for the main event with Ross proclaiming the start of the Goldberg era when he won the world title from Triple H. And Triple H then put up a $100,000 bounty put on the head of Bill Goldberg for anyone to take him out and injure him. And it would be Batista that would earn the $100,000 by injuring the ankle of Bill Goldberg. And then we went into our Limp Bizkit building a bridge montage.
All right.
Nothing says exciting main event like Bill Goldberg limping to Limp Bizkit. Ha. Huh. Limping Bizkit.
I get it.
Ha. Huh. Goldberg Hunter, world title match. Goldberg attacks right away with Flair distracting the official. And Goldberg then spears Hunter, who was coming off a bad groin injury here and was wearing these like...
The boxer briefs.
Yeah, but like these pants. Like, yeah, like... Like bicycle pants or something.
Yeah, like bicycle shorts, basically.
Hunter also looking very fit here.
I wouldn't say so.
No?
Compared to that Madison Square Garden when he returned from that leg injury?
He was at a different level.
He looked much softer. He was thick, but he looked much softer.
Goldberg goes for a military press, but his right leg gives out, and Hunter gets the advantage. Got the heat for the next few minutes. With the referee down, Hunter got a set of brass knucks and hits Goldberg with them, but only gets a two count. Then Hunter elbow drops Earl Hebner, gets the sledgehammer, but Goldberg gets his boot up to avoid. Flair gets tossed off the top rope into the ring. Goldberg attacks both men, then uses the sledgehammer. Batista runs in and gets hit. Ditto for Randy Orton. But then Hunter attacks him. Goldberg blocks a pedigree, tosses the sledgehammer away rather than uses it, because instead he spears Triple H. And the crowd starts to get into the finish. He hits the jackhammer with Flair, Batista, and Orton all laid out. The ref is out, turns over, counts three, and Goldberg wins 11 minutes and 44 seconds. And Jim Ross did as best he could here, selling how big this was, going off the air, and telling everyone to believe the hype with Bill Goldberg.
He was in, he was at level 10 mode, Jim Ross. And it felt, compared to the Steve Austin match, I thought this was an unwarranted call from Jim Ross, because the crowd was simply incongruent with the level of energy that this guy was giving. This crowd wasn't really taking that much to this match. For a main event, it was quite underwhelming because it was just very basic and definitely not one of the stronger matches on this card.
And that was the show. Very lackluster main event, I thought. But this show had some great moments to it.
Yeah.
Really highlighted by that Raw elimination match, which was fantastic. Fantastic match. So this show, Way, I'm going to give a 7 out of 10 overall.
I give it a 7.5.
Wow. We're so close in our ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. The Survivor Series 2003. And we'll now head over to the message board and see what you guys had to say about the show. And, Way, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I think I will.
You don't have it loaded, do you?
As I'm waiting for my...
Okay, I'll start. From Blaine, who starts it off. This was actually one of my favorite Survivor Series events of all time. I really appreciated how they spent so much time trying to build up every match on the card and at least trying to make all the matches seem important. Whereas today, you get matches like Antonio Cesaro against R-Truth, which they could have easily saved for Raw or SmackDown. Actually, I think that match was on SmackDown later that week. I remember being interested in the Shane versus Kane match, but then I was 19 at the time, so what did I know? As stupid as it was for Shane McMahon to have so much offense against a monster heel, it kind of makes sense that Shane would fight a lot harder than normal, considering he's out for revenge for what Kane did to his mother. This was a time when the elimination matches still meant something. Both were booked differently, but they both resulted in pushing new stars, which is always a good thing. The first one was more of a David versus Goliath concept, while the second was simply a matter of raising the stakes. I really enjoyed the suspense in the closing minutes of the Team Austin versus Team Bischoff match. They also did a really good job of teasing things for the following year's Mania, even though the Goldberg and Triple H angle heading into the pay-per-view was an obvious rip-off of the angle involving Flair and Harley Race. I think it worked very effectively to create interest in that match, and it was done with the right two guys.
Thank you, Blaine. We go to our next piece of feedback from Andrew McDonald, who says, I was able to catch the show, not online, but in my collection. When I first got into my trade, I started making good money and spent a bunch of money on many DVDs, which were on sale at Walmart in the cheap bin, so I was able to watch this one on my television. Well, thank you, Andrew, for letting us know about that. The very first thing I noticed was the star power in comparison to today. While I enjoyed the opener at the Survivor Series 2012, there wasn't half the star power that both the Survivor Series matches had this year. Even Team Haas had a good amount of threatening-looking people. It was good to see a Tensai match without the crowd yelling Albert, though he was jobbed out pretty quickly. The more things changed, the more they stayed the same. It also wouldn't be a match refereed by Brian Hebner without him taking some sort of bump, even if he was just shoved. The biggest shocker of the paper review came in the second match when the crowd was chanting for one of the female competitors as if they actually cared about that person. They also had two unique talents in Molly Holly and Lita, so no one had to be confused by who was who. It wasn't the noisiest crowd I ever heard for that match, but it was like CM Punk's homecoming in Chicago in comparison to all the Divas matches nowadays. I enjoyed the video with Kane's best Chris Murphy impression from 9 years in the future. Watching the Survivor Series match between the two GMs had great drama, thanks to Shawn Michaels and the commentary of Jim Ross, who really showed once again how valuable he is. That seems to be the biggest theme of Review Away. Jim Ross is the greatest commentator ever. Overall, a pretty good show made better by bringing both the brands together. I liked the separate brand pay-per-views at the time, because it made shows like these seem special. 7 out of 10.
We go on over to Doug Lyons. Ah, yes. 2003 Survivor Series. I remember fondly as up until a couple of years ago, I had this on DVD. I guess he got rid of it.
Yeah.
I don't remember the women's match or the tag title match, but the opener of Team Angle, I remember Cena still freestyling at this point and found it entertaining. The match itself had a good pace to it, and I really enjoyed it. It was funny seeing a young Matt Morgan, and does anyone remember Nathan Jones? I also remember Hardcore Holly returning from a broken neck they built up as a big deal. Shane and Kane was entertaining to me, and Shane bumped his ass off as he usually does, especially the coast-to-coast spot off the ambulance was nice to hear Kane's Finger 11 theme as well. Being from Burlington, I have an appreciation for Finger 11. Austin and Bischoff is my favorite Survivor Series match ever, with the stip that if Austin's team lost, he had to retire. Great drama, and even the Batista run-in at the end was great, and this was Randy Orton's match to shine. Buried Alive was only entertaining because of the beating McMahon took at the hands of Taker. This was Taker's last match as the biker gimmick. I never expected the Kane run-in to cost Taker the match, but was a good twist, and Kane's reason was believable. And he says, solid card, memorable to me, as this was the peak of the SmackDown period, 8 out of 10.
From Dexter Morgan from Miami.
Dexter Morgan from Miami. I don't know if we should applaud these gimmick names. Dexter Morgan is the serial killer from Jeff Hardy's Imagine.
Yeah, okay, I don't watch that show, sorry. This was in a period when the work rate of the WWE was at an all-time high. The show from top to bottom was excellent, and it's certainly a sharp contrast to what we see today. I believe at this point in time they wanted to do Benoit versus Lesnar, since Benoit made Lesnar tap clean in the elimination match. However, plans change. 7 out of 10.
Go to Jake from the UK. This is the first time I've left feedback for Review Away, and I've been listening to all of your podcasts for a few months now. After rewatching Survivor Series 2003, I can't help but compare it to this year's Survivor Series. The opener was decent, but I found it interesting to see A-Train and Tensai involved in this match. 9 years later, he's in the exact same spot on the card. What great progress he's made in the WWE during that time. The ambulance match was pretty fun and had some interesting spots, but not much else. I really enjoyed the Team Austin versus Team Bischoff match. Shawn Michaels was outstanding in the final stretch of the match, but I hated Bischoff's interference when he hit the single worst kick I've seen in my life on Michaels. This was just one part of an overbooked finish. Buried Alive match was pretty gruesome. Having Vince bleed within 30 seconds was pretty stupid but memorable. He just bled and got the shit kicked out of him for over 10 minutes. Nothing special, but that blade job was epic. Goldberg Triple H was predictably slow and shitty, and the involvement of Evolution seemed over the top to me. Overall, I enjoyed this pay-per-view as it was pretty solid throughout. Highlight of the show was a fan in the front row opposite the hard camera. He seemingly had an array of signs to ridicule heels throughout the night that included gems like World's Fattest Man, Total Idiot, accurately describing Randy Orton at the time, and Jericho Sucks Like Paris Hilton. 7 out of 10.
Oh, that's so clever. Paul Ellett from the UK. Watching this show, one of the things that has stood out is how well Austin's character has been indirectly rebuilt in the last few years by taking a hiatus. He was definitely overexposed after that last match against Rock at WrestleMania 19, and in those co-GM and sheriff roles. The pay-per-view was what Survivor Series ought to be. It felt like a strong show, but didn't have to do too much, knowing that the road to Mania was around the corner. Seeds were sown for Mania, like Taker burying Kane burying Taker, Benoit looking strong against Brock, and Orton and Batista being given big rubs. Matt Morgan had one of the silliest Titantrons, and surely Nathan Jones was the Putski winner of the pay-per-view. Oh yeah, who do you give it to?
Oh geez. You know, I'm going with Vince McMahon on this show.
Congratulations. Multi-time winner, Vince McMahon.
Multiple time. I think he's surpassed Luger at this point.
Maybe. The Raw Survivor Series match was excellent. Everyone was on form in their roles. This performance by Shawn was one of those that gets slightly forgotten in favor of one of his numerous big singles matches. I always liked Vince being on SmackDown around this time and never felt he hijacked the show. He was so synonymous with Raw during the Attitude Era that he filled the sports entertainment quota for SmackDown, which was considered the wrestling brand. His presence added legitimacy and he slotted in nicely with some fun use of the Mr. McMahon character in 2003. Hogan and Mr. McMahon, Zach Gowen, the Alliance with Brock, the campy feud stuff with Stephanie. I'm surprised Vince had any blood left after all that he spilled in pay-per-view matches that year. The Goldberg bounty stuff had slipped my mind, and it was a nice minor storyline to build for this pay-per-view while Trips was absent from TV. 7 Michael Cole soul patches out of 10.
Let's go to Kieran Roche. Hey guys, I've been waiting for you guys to review this show for a long time, as even though I may be looking at this show with nostalgia, this is one of my favorite pay-per-views ever. Even the promo videos for each match are fantastic in my opinion. That I would agree with. I love the match between Shane and Kane, and it's the match that really made me respect Shane. The Austin Bischoff tag match is the best Survivor Series tag match I've ever seen, thanks to Shawn Michaels. He truly was the showstopper. Finally, the Buried Alive match was just insane. I think it could possibly be the bloodiest match I've ever seen on WWE television. I absolutely love this pay-per-view and can't praise it enough. 10 out of 10.
From Kevin in Ireland, who says, the Austin Bischoff match showed why Michaels is the greatest in-ring performer of my generation. I'm 30. He put on a clinic of timing, selling, and taking the crowd, who were great, on a roller coaster ride. When he returned, he was a guy who didn't have anything to prove, nor was he worried about his spot, and his work was all the better for it. When Brock was being interviewed and said to Goldberg, "What are you looking at?" I half expected him to finish the question with the word, "Butthead, Biff Tannen style." Did you get that?
I didn't. I was reading something else. Sorry.
All right. And the main event, funny how when Triple H was... I don't get it either, for the record. Funny how when Triple H was world champion, it was top title. This was Triple H in the middle of his, I think I'm elevating guys when I'm actually ruining them while wearing bicycle shorts phase. RVD, Steiner, Booker, and here, Goldberg were all victims of his slow plotting style that suited him, but nobody else. This was a really good show until the last two matches. We couldn't top the drama of the Austin Bischoff team match, during which the crowd peaked. 6 Randy Orton nipple tweaks out of 10.
Will Young, this is an event from the year that I started watching wrestling, and I could talk about a lot of things relating to this card, like how much I loved the Shane Kane angle when I was 13, or how brutal the Buried Alive match was for Vince, but I really want to get something across about this show that I feel very strongly about. The ending to the Austin Bischoff Survivor Series match is, in my opinion, one of the greatest endings to a match ever. In my mind, I compare it to the ending of a Shakespearean tragedy. In the final moments, Austin got a big release of emotion when he started kicking the shit out of Bischoff, but in doing so, he left Shawn open to an attack by Batista, which ended the match. In acquiring my English degree, I learned of a term in tragedy called hamartia, which means fatal flaw. It is something the hero does or embodies that ultimately causes their downfall, and it is exemplified perfectly here. The mere fact that I can compare this even tangentially to theater really means a lot to me, and I look at this ending sequence as an example of how wrestling can sometimes be akin to an art form. Beyond theatricality, the emotion in this ending is still palpable nearly 10 years later. Jim Ross has some of the best calls of his career, going from unbelievably exciting to absolutely defeated. The look on Austin's face at the end really sold what felt like a huge consequence, though it did not end up being so. I even love hearing the sound of the Evolution theme as everyone in the arena slowly realizes that Austin's team lost, one of the most perfect bad guys win moments. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about this event. I've wanted to communicate this for a long time, and it's one of the strongest memories I have through 10 years as a wrestling fan.
Well, thank you. Very, very analytical. That was good. We go to Tim from Australia, who says, Kane and Shane match was fun for what it was. That shot Kane took with the ambulance door was brutal. Team Austin versus Bischoff was a good match with great commentary by JR, really putting over the implications of the match. Vince's blade job was totally messed up. He bled so much. It's a wonder he didn't die in that match. And the main event was probably the worst match on the card. I'm going to give Survivor Series 6 sign guys out of 10.
James Starkey writes, it was my first time watching this pay-per-view. I left wrestling during the Attitude peak, and I didn't get back in until TNA's main event Mafia angle for some reason. First impressions. Fuck, what a stacked card. Angle, Lesnar, Benoit, Big Show, and, Tensai in the curtain jerker? Apart from a few nothing matches, the main card was consistently pretty excellent. Shane McMahon is pretty much the lizard from the Backyard documentary you reviewed last week. I watched it a few hours before Survivor Series, and if Shane wasn't Vince's son, he'd probably be doing these kind of insane bullshit stunts in front of about 3 people. He just has no understanding of psychology at all. I remember John recapping one of his matches before, saying it was supposed to be a serious grudge match, and he was dancing down the aisle. He didn't do that here, but he sort of moonwalked from behind the curtain, and then seemed to remember he was fighting Kane for breaking his mother's neck. This match seemed to go on forever, and that ambulance door shot looked disgusting. Last week, Jopo said there was a sick blade job in here, and when Sean bladed, I thought that was it. But then Vince bladed. Fucking hell, it was just too much. Horrible to watch. The highlight was Taz's tips, or whatever they were called. His advice to Vince in the Buried Alive match was, do not fall in the hole. Thanks a lot, Taz.
We got a Mark McKenzie who says, I love the Shane and Kane angle when I was 13, but still do because it's so hilarious and ridiculous in retrospect. But the match here was a pretty standard hardcore brawl that I find has aged poorly. It's so ridiculous to see Kane sell for Shane O'Mac's stupid shuffle punches. The Basham brothers managed to make Eddie Guerrero boring. The main event was pretty forgettable, but I still really liked Triple H putting a bounty up for Goldberg, even if it was just a recycled NWA angle from the 80s. Goldberg should have been booked way stronger than he was. Dude got over as a monster who destroyed everybody in WCW, so it was a little disappointing seeing him booked as just another guy this year in the WWE. The Buried Alive match doesn't get its due as one of the worst matches ever. Just Undertaker punching Vince as Vince bleeds. That's the sickest blade job I've ever seen, and it's for absolutely nothing. There's no drama, no heat, no interest whatsoever. Michaels did some pretty good color in his match, but the difference here is that the story of the match called for it. Vince just bled and bled and bled to absolute silence because no one wanted to see the match to begin with. In closing, this show reminds me a lot of what was wrong with the 2003 WWE. A really stacked roster that more often than not fails to live up to its potential due to lousy booking. The Austin Bischoff Survivor Series match delivered way more than I expected it to, so despite my problems with the other matches and the long filler segments like the one with Coach and Mark Cuban, I'll give this a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, this was such a weird period for the company. Like, I remember the booking at this time. I mean, there was such great talent, but I remember creatively just not really being enthused by too much of it at this point in time, at least. Over to Mike Still. Now, this is a Survivor Series. The series elimination match is always hit or miss for me, and when I think of examples of good ones, I turn to this show for two entirely different examples. First, we have the SmackDown match, which, between the age and size, has some of the least mobile wrestlers on the roster, not to mention how Green, Jones, and Morgan were at the time. But I do remember when Team Brock first came together. Heyman gave the mother of all hype promos to the point where you would believe these clumsy giants are killers. The match itself had a great story to tell, with Angle and Lesnar being the focus going in, but Benoit and Cena being the newly over babyfaces as a result. This was the first big step in making Cena a big babyface for SmackDown and Benoit into a WrestleMania main eventer only a few months later. This is followed later on by the Raw match, different enough from the first that you were still interested, and to make it better, we had actual stipulations attached. Each member of Team Bischoff was owed a favor after their win, which made for fun TV in the weeks to come. This was a great way to rebuild Orton as a vicious heel, and man, did Shawn Michaels give it all that he was worth. Probably his best non-Mania match since returning from injury. As for the rest of the card, well, if you like McMahon matches, this was the show for you. This show was the send-off of the Super Shane character, so we can be thankful for that. It was also the last hurrah for Goldberg. Being pinned at SummerSlam took all the steam out of his character, and giving him the belt for a short run after was too late, too little too late. The fact he'd lose the belt at the next B-show was all you needed to know about how serious Triple H was about getting any value out of a guy who was once the biggest star in all of wrestling. I give the show 8 electrocuted testicles out of 10.
We go to Chris from Ottawa, who says, I remember the Survivor Series more than any other. This was the peak of my friend's interest in wrestling, the 2003-04 time period, and one of my favorite time periods, mainly for SmackDown. I was a freshman in high school when this pay-per-view occurred, but it still remains vivid in my mind to this day. I actually sat up at 3 a.m. to watch this when I found out it was being reviewed. I love this pay-per-view. Angle versus Lesnar had a great story, and there was a reason for each guy on each team to be in that match. What a novel concept, eh? Haven't seen them since the aforementioned 05 Survivor Series. Match itself wasn't anything special, but did put over Cena and Benoit. It was refreshing to see a decent women's match and to hear the Fink announcing. I could have done without Kane versus Shane, but nothing is perfect, I suppose, and it wasn't really that painful to sit through. I was especially concerned to see Kane and Cena earlier this year. I just didn't care for it. Was a big fan of Los Guerreros, but didn't care for the Dominatrix twins. The tag match was all right to watch, though. Angle versus Bischoff was my highlight of the show and one of the last great Survivor Series matches. Excuse me. I have a lot of memory and nostalgia for this show and this time period, and I'm happy to see that the 2003 Summer. He keeps typing SS, and I just think SummerSlam. I'm happy to see the show get its due. I give it 7.5 unprotected chair shots. Shovel shots out of 10.
And our final one here from Chris Holt, who writes, we'll just skim through this here because there's a bit here. Let's go here. Ambulance match. Superman McMahon versus Kane. Always found Shane to be unbelievable. Like a create-your-own wrestler with all the moves. Dislike when matches disappear into the back of the arena, shortchanging the ticket-buying crowd. Kane selling a car backing into concrete a yard in front of him was funny. Glad to see the crowd booing the technical issues. Lawler, a lot less annoying than the previous match. I couldn't recall if the roof of the ambulance was gimmicked, but that was a JBL limo a couple of years later. Typical Shane spot fest, built Kane as a monster heel as he watched the ambulance botch its way out of the arena. Nice sowing of the seeds for Lesnar-Goldberg. Shame the match at 20 was a dud. Coach was a fun heel at this time. Too bad it led to Bischoff. Did he have shares in Just for Men at the time? Anyway, says, overall, this wasn't any different to the pay-per-views of today. Some decent undercard work, but the last two matches were duds. Overall, 6 electrically faulty JCBs out of 10. Keep up the good work, chaps. So there are lots of feedback here to the Survivor Series 2003. I think one that a lot of people remember fondly in hindsight. I think as time goes on, unless a pay-per-view is an absolute disaster, you tend to focus on the positives years removed. Whereas in the short term, I think we look at the negatives in the interim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
An interesting look. But some great feedback this week. We got Shakespearean analysis. We got people from all over the globe. We had discussions about the lizard.
Yes.
Everything was covered in the feedback this week. But that was going to bring us to a close because, Wei, you've got to get on over to Schwartz's right now, I believe. Isn't that where you're going for dinner tonight?
Yes, I'm going to Schwartz's, the world-famous Schwartz's in Montreal. After that, I'm going to have a poutine somewhere.
Oh, wow.
And you, John, you are on your way to New York.
That is right. I am traveling to New York, where I'm getting in a time machine to go back to January the 23rd of 1984.
What?
That is right, Wei. Next week, we are going to review one of the WWF's most important shows, their Madison Square Garden show from January the 23rd of 1984. Main event, WWF champion the Iron Sheik, the newly minted WWF champion, defending his title against a young upstart named Hulk Hogan.
Hmm. The birth of Hulkamania.
That is it. So we are going to review a classic, or maybe a not-so-classic. So let's see how this show shapes up. 84 WWF. I don't think we're going to see quite the work rate we did on the Survivor Series.
I think this could be the oldest show we've ever reviewed.
This probably is. I don't think we've ever reviewed anything pre-84.
Yeah. What else is on this show? Curious.
I have no clue. But folks can watch this because it has been uploaded onto YouTube. So if you go search WWF Madison Square Garden, it's the first video that pops up. It's entitled WWF MSG January 23rd, 84, The Birth of Hulkamania and Sports Entertainment. And someone will probably post that on the message board. So you can watch this whole 2.5 hour house show extravaganza.
Yes, Hulk Hogan at this time was a substitute for Bob Backlund, taking on the Sheik. And we also have on the show IC champion Don Morocco taking on Tito Santana.
Can we also keep count of how many of the people on this show nearly 30 years ago have worked an indie show in the last year?
If you can keep track of that stat.
Or sure. Any show, for that matter.
Also on the show, we have Mr. Fuji and Tiger Chung Lee taking on the Invaders, as well Chief J Strongbow taking on the Masked Superstar, Sergeant Slaughter versus Ivan Putski.
This is not going to be a good show.
It's going to be amazing.
All right. Well, that's coming up next week, folks, so you can go check that out on YouTube. As we get on out of here, we are going to be back later this week. Review and Impact right now, I'm going to write down as a question mark. So just come back and check. I don't know if it'll happen or not Thursday night. I have a super early flight on Friday. And if I also have a rehearsal Thursday night, it's going to be extremely difficult to watch Impact. So maybe, maybe not. We will see. I don't want to be held to it. But if it does not happen, it is solely my fault. But we will be back with The Law this coming Sunday night featuring Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, and returning to studio, One Wei Ting.
I will be there. I will be filling in for John's seat.
I will be gone. There will be no me, but Wei Ting will be there. And we will be joined this Sunday by AJ Styles.
Oh.
To chat about Claire Lynch, to chat about Final Resolution, his final battle with Christopher Daniels. All that and more coming up this Sunday, TSN 1050 Toronto, the Team 1410 in Vancouver, midnight Eastern time. So you can check that out. You can also download this past weekend show where we had Arda Ocal in studio for a roundtable chat, which was a lot of fun. Review of Raw is up from Monday night and lots of stuff. The MMA report is coming out later this week. I will be joined by Canadian Mike Ricci, who is taking on Michael Hill Friday on The Ultimate Fighter, and this to me has been one of the best built-up fights of the year on Ultimate Fighter. The ultimate heel turn by Mike Ricci on his fellow Canadian, Michael Hill.
Sunglasses and all, yes.
Fantastic. You are also going to be interacting with Mike Ricci later today, I believe.
Yes, we're on our way to try to start to shoot some interviews with one Mike Ricci. But he can't talk about The Ultimate Fighter at all, so I don't know how Ramdeen's going to do this interview.
It'll be interesting. This will be pushing the definition of evergreen for Mr. Rammer. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to be checking that out, so hopefully you will download every single one of our shows and listen to it many, many times over. And you can subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. Join the message board, lawradio.proboards.com, and you can follow Wei at Wei0937, at I am John Pollock. And in the meantime, go on over to liveaudiowrestling.com. And we need a song to go out, don't we?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. What screams 1984 to you, Wei? What musicians?
Oh, don't you want to say that for next week?
I guess so. Yeah, you're right.
This week, there's only one band we can go off.
I can't go out with Limp Bizkit.
Yes, you can. Why not?
Well, I played it at the start.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
We built a bridge. What's the worst Limp Bizkit song you can think of? Or the best one? One or the other?
I probably wouldn't know the worst one.
Do you want to hear
the
Nookie?
Best one? Not really.
No? Okay.
How about, I don't know. How about Faith? Their cover of Faith. How apropos with the higher power bullshit.
Look at that. Connecting it all. Faith by Limp Bizkit takes us out. A band that no one has any of any longer.
Oh, God. Just end this. This is terrible.
Brutal.
Awful. But I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play, cause I play them too. Showing you that door, rock!